Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Being the young wife of a powerful man, you already feel that you need to prove yourself. I always felt like I'm not good enough, so I had to prove myself. It was hard, really, really hard to live in the embassy for me. I realize now how much I was holding in, actually, and trying to be perfect. I'm equally valuable. It's not like my husband is the famous ambassador and I'm the sidekick fool that's supposed to smile and nod all the time. I want to have a mission too and a purpose. But I felt like shit when I wasn't working. I felt like I was not worth anything. But no one ever really talks about like their failures. Like a lot of, you know, women that are CEOs in America are divorced. They don't have, or they never had kids. How does that feel? Do they have regrets? And so, yes, you can have it all, but it's extremely hard. No one is more hated on this planet than a really confident woman. I think that's true. Now I feel that nothing can touch me. You know, nothing bothers me. I really, really don't care what people think of me.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to my podcast. This is actually a Swedish podcast, but since this interview is made with Natalia Brzezinski, who doesn't speak Swedish, we decided to do this in English. And the podcast is made by me, Jennifer Kovacs. In this podcast, I interview Swedish women or women who have a connection to Sweden, like Natalia. We talk about the truth about their life, the life you usually don't see, hear, or read in our social medias and magazines. In this episode, as I said, I'm interviewing Natalia Brzezinski. Today, she's married to Mark Brzezinski, the U.S. ambassador to Sweden, which is the person she usually is introduced as. But who is Natalia? Where does she come from and how did she grow up? What is her values? What is she fighting for in life and what drives her? This is just some questions we will have the answer on after this interview. Natalia is very driven by gender equality. She lived here in Sweden for 4 years and moved back to the States in the fall of 2015. Living here, she discovered parts of the Swedish culture and laws that would be great for the United States to implement, and vice versa, of course. This really drove her to talk about how we could learn from each other, especially when it comes to gender equality. Today, Natalia is having her own podcast, Stand Out, interviewing powerful women and is also having a bunch of other projects going on. Yeah, you will hear them all in the podcast. I don't want to spoil it all. Like it usually is when I'm doing a podcast, we start talking a little bit before we start to officially record. And sometimes these conversations are good and gives you a lot of information about the person, just like in this case. Me and Natalia were talking about her hometown Chicago, where I spent 1 year as an au pair. So we talked about the city and the different neighborhoods in the beginning, before we officially started. If you like this podcast, I have another episode in English. I'm interviewing Rachel Brayton, also known as Yoga Girl. If you want to hear the episode with her, you can just type it in into iTunes or search O-podden, O-P-O-D-D-E-N. You can find me on Instagram, also typing in O-podden. Well, now let's enjoy this episode with Natalia Brzezinski.
I grew up like on the South Side. When I was younger, my parents were immigrants, like really like, I mean, very close to where Michelle Obama grew up, like a very ethnic neighborhood, like very diverse, you know, and then very poor. And then when I got older, I mean, by the time I was in high school, they had done pretty well. They were entrepreneurs. So we went, like, we moved to the suburbs. And I went to a all very white high school, pretty rich kids. Like, I remember they all, my friends were getting BMWs when they turned 16. And it was such a, like,
different.
That's like me. Like, my worlds are always so different. And I, looking back, I loved being in the poor area more. You know, it was more, I mean, people were scrappy and like street smart. And, you know, it was such a letdown in a way. I mean, it's funny when you think about the American dream and that's how it should be. But I don't like that period of my life, like high school, it was okay. But people, there was a lot of drugs. People were lazy and like no goals. And I think when you're kind of struggling, you're so driven sometimes too. And that's what I love. Like, that's the kind of people I seek out, I guess, as friends or husband, boyfriend, whatever.
But where in Chicago did you move then? I was
Hinsdale.
I was in Wilmette.
Oh, I know exactly. Yeah, that's a really wealthy area.
Yeah, well,
I used to ice skate there.
Really?
Because I was a competitive ice skater.
I know that. But, so you had like competitions there.
Because that was a really big area. There were a lot of ice rinks there. And I think also ice skating is such an expensive sport that there was like a mix of people. So they call it the North Shore, like Wilmette, Winnetka. Yeah.
Exactly.
All those places. There were a lot of ice skaters.
Yeah. And then Evanston.
Robert Crown.
With the Northwestern.
Exactly.
Football players.
Yeah. You must have had fun.
Yeah, but I was not 21 when I was there. Oh. I was like, damn it.
How old were you?
20.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
I just missed it. Yeah, so I definitely need to go back to Chicago. And I'm a little bit jealous of you going back there now.
I love it. I mean, Chicago's kind of like a less snobby New York. You know,
yeah. And like a clean New York.
And clean, and the restaurant scene, because it's so ethnic, like, you can get, also when you have a family, you just see the quality. You can get so much more for your money, like a bigger house. You know, the services, there's a lot of, you know, if you have babysitters. I mean, it's just a little bit easier,
yeah.
I think.
Okay, well.
Is it on?
Well, we are on,
oh,
but
Sandra,
this is just
knows
like.
That I'm always cutting.
I mean, now we're on.
But you can use that. I don't care.
Yeah, we're just like, I mean, it's always fun to also, you know, have the talk before
Absolutely.
You get serious, just normal conversations.
Absolutely.
It's like you get the personality of the person more. But let's start now. Now we're getting serious. So welcome to my podcast.
Thank you.
How does it feel to be in the other chair, not interviewing?
I think, you know, the way my job has become, I talk so much. And it's nice to talk to you, actually, because it's not a business sales pitch, but I like both. I mean, my husband always says I'm really self-oriented. It's like, you come from a generation that promotes themselves, and, you know, the Facebook just, I like it. I like to be interviewed. But no, jokes aside, I actually really like to talk about the way I grew up. And so you get so many stories, especially when you're in Europe, of like the American dream and everything's so perfect. And I'm really open. That's why I didn't do that much when I was kind of in the embassy role. But now I feel so free to be honest about things. And so for me, it's kind of, it's a liberated time. It's exciting. So I love to be on the other side.
Good. I'm glad we got
either
to do
way.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, it was just like a day ago. They were like, oh, do you want to interview Natalia? I'm like, okay, sure. Like being a little bit nervous. Not meeting you, but like with the English, you know, it takes time to get into the flow. And
absolutely.
Like, so if I'm like stalking myself, you need to be my lifeline.
You're
here.
Great.
Thanks.
Swedes are so good at English. They all complain and they say, but everybody's perfect. I mean, I lived in Denmark and my parents are from Eastern Europe. And now with business, I've been in Germany. I mean, people speak perfect English here. That's why I think it's such a great place, like for startups and everything. Because if you're an American and you come to work here, you really get along pretty easily. And people want to speak English.
Especially when they've been drinking.
Oh, yes.
Then they're like, woohoo. Ah. Then they like it. But you're a very special person when I, like, did this research of you. And I could tell that you're a woman with a big heart and a great personality. And you're not afraid of showing who you are and stand up for your thoughts and what you believe in. And I really like this about you because you're showing your personal, like, features. And
Thank you.
I think this is really good since you're also having, like, a role model title because you're the ambassador's wife.
Yes.
So, I mean, and with this comes a lot of responsibility. Do you think that?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes I think back to my background again. I mean, for me growing up, I didn't get anything handed to me. Everything was a struggle. And I also had to do everything on my own. I mean, not that my parents didn't take care of me. They did, but they were working, you know. I mean, no one told me to do my homework. No one helped me with my homework. No one helped me get into college. No one. And I think actually, like, looking back, even though it was so hard and I felt really lonely sometimes, and sometimes I used to say to my mom, why can't you kind of get me into this job, or like my friends' moms do? But I am so happy because I'm really independent and I'm really self-reliant. You know, the whole ambassador's wife thing, like, I think if I have so many weaknesses, but one thing is I'm not really impressed by people. Not impressed by people, but I don't get intimidated in if I meet someone famous, or I guess that's a good part of my parents. I mean, they taught me that, like, titles and celebrity, that doesn't matter. It's your work ethic, your character, like, being really hard worker. That was something they really valued, and pushing yourself all the time. So I actually, like, get excited to meet someone interesting or powerful because I learn from them. And I think that's helped me with women, too, because I don't even understand this whole concept of women not helping each other or, like, bringing each other down. Maybe it's because, as I said again, my mom was and is the breadwinner. She was the one with the great job, and, like, she works really hard. She takes care of her brothers and my grandmother, and, like, she still gets up at 4 a.m., does all the laundry, works a full day. She's a really demanding job. She runs, like, part of the budget for the whole city of Chicago. So I think I always saw her struggling, and, like, she was always helping friends and things like that. I think that was part of the immigrant thing. And so for me, when I would meet, like, a beautiful woman or a really smart woman, my first instinct is I want to be her friend. Like, I want to learn from her. Oh, I want to be close to her. It wasn't I want to bring her down and stab her in the back. So I think if anything was a surprise to me, like, becoming an ambassador's wife and kind of stepping into really powerful scene in America, because my husband comes from a pretty powerful family, and, you know, I had never really totally experienced that, was this element of people wanting to bring you down, like, you know, people wanting to hurt you or get something out of you and not really caring about you as a person, but just what can you do for me? I mean, sometimes, like, my Swedish friends always said, it's so amazing, like, you network so well, and it's because Americans are so good at it. But I really think in America, yes, we're good at reaching out and people are more open, but I think in Sweden and in Europe, when you have a friend, it's like a friend for life. Where sometimes in Washington or New York, you're friends for 5 minutes while you can help that person. And when
it's
you can
kind of
help
shallow
them,
friendship.
It is. And, like, I mean, it's, you know, I hate to say this because I work in tech now, but even the concept of Facebook, like, friendship that's quick and easy. And, like, you know, my brother's adopted and he's 18, and he considers himself friends with people that he's never even met.
Yeah.
Like, they're just friends they met on YouTube and they kind of chat. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, even I try to be open-minded, but even to me, that's crazy. So,
yeah, I have so many friends on Facebook that I'm like, okay, I wouldn't even know you if I tripped over you and, like, at the street. So I might need to delete you from my friends there on Facebook. But, I mean, do you feel like you have a lot of eyes on you and people, especially when you came into this role, that people thought you needed to be in some type of way to fit in this political world?
Yes.
Especially because you spend time with America's president also.
Yeah.
How have you stayed true to yourself there and not being affected of all those, the mindset people have on how you need to be?
It was really hard. It was like, I mean, now we were here for 3.5 years and now we're out of this role. And I think it took me that entire time. It was really my last year because I think for me, it was a longer period. That was part of it. But I got married quite young and my husband is older and established. So I really stepped into his life. And, like, I've always been a strong character, but I think being the young wife of a powerful man, you already feel that you need to prove yourself. Being in Washington, where everyone is really powerful and went to Harvard, I always felt like I'm not good enough, so I had to prove myself. And I think part of that is just with age and you know, you're due in March, becoming a mother. Because there's something that is super powerful about, you know, knowing that you can bring a life into the world. You can take care of that life. You can also work. You can also, like, we're super women, you know. Sorry, but men can't do that.
I know.
We can do 10 things. And sometimes at the end of the day, I'm so exhausted. But it kind of feels good. Like, I have a finger in 5 pots or 5 balls in the air juggling, and I can still do it. Not every day, but, I mean, so part of that evolution was with motherhood. And I think I'm the kind of person, though, it was hard, really hard to live in the embassy for me, because I am really open, and I think I would say things or do things, or like if someone asked me, are you having a bad, how are you today? I'd be like, I'm bad, you know?
Yeah.
And then people would think into that, or like, she exercises a lot. Does she have a problem? Or, you know, it was always, you know, I wasn't used to that level of attention, even though, you know, I've had some before. And I think that made me self-conscious, but it's the kind of thing when you fall really low to the ground, it's like, then I learned to pick myself up. Now I feel that nothing can touch me. You know, nothing bothers me. I really, really don't care what people think of me. Honestly.
How did you get there?
I think that kind of struck that, but I would say just generally learning. It was, I probably stepped into like, sometimes my friends in the USA, you have like the life of a 55-year-old woman in some ways, in terms of the level of professional things and like the kinds of people I was interacting with. So I think I did like grow up fast, as they say, and do things really quickly. But I always had great mentors, both in America, like in my family, and then I think finding the female friends in Sweden. My friends, I mean, including Sandra, who's both of our producers, and so many women in Stockholm, they really supported me, and men. But I think having that base and having, you know, my husband is almost 20 years older, so his sister, who's a TV host, and, you know, a lot of his family who have big jobs, they were older, and they introduced me to a kind of a scene of women like Arianna Huffington and other people, thanks to my sister-in-law. And so I also had this perspective of knowing these women who really shared the way with me. I mean, they really said, I remember when I was moving here and I was 26 and stepping into this really prestigious role, and my sister-in-law Mika said to me, like, okay, get ready. You're going to be the most hated person on both sides of the Atlantic. You know, no one will like you in Sweden. No one will be careful, like, of people that work with you. And at first I thought, like, what is she talking about? My dad said a similar thing. To some extent, she was right, at least for the first few years, for the beginning, until I really felt my own power. But I think to some extent, as women, that's true. I read once somewhere, it was like a tweet by some celebrity like Beyonce or Jennifer Lawrence, one of these women. And it was like, you know, no one is more hated on this planet than a really confident woman. And I think that's true.
Definitely.
But at the same time, if you have people, that's kind of why I did my podcast Stand Out, and why you're doing yours, is I really think a lot of women, they talk about their successes. Like when you go to a conference or a speech or you read a book, it's like, this is what I did and this is how I got here. But no one ever really talks about like their failures. Like a lot of, you know, women that are CEOs in America are divorced. They don't have, or they never had kids, or they never, how does that feel? Do they have regrets? And so that's really why I wanted to do a show. And because I think, yes, you can have it all, but it's extremely hard. And you will sometimes feel like you're either an inadequate mother or an inadequate wife. You're going to get pressure from all kinds of people, including your parents. Like sometimes my parents will say, you know, they're pretty traditional. Like they called me yesterday, well, you can't be away from your daughter for too long because you're being a bad mother. You know, it's so much. You have to be so like steel in your spine just to not let anything get to you. And like I say these things to myself, like just focused, you know, you're fine. Know yourself. I mean, it's a constant mantra. Like, but I think eventually, as they say, you fake it until you make it.
I think I faked it a little bit, and now I kind of, I'm almost there. I have my low days.
But I'm glad you're saying that, you know, that you're like, oh, I have my low days, or, you know, with all these balls up in there, you know, and like, oh, I can handle it. Not every day, you know, but I can handle it, because that's important to her. Like, okay, not every day. I have shitty days too, you know. Yeah. And it's like totally fine. You know, you don't need to be
perfect.
Exactly. And that word is just like, what is perfect?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you talked about your podcast that's Stand Out is the name of it. And I mean, yeah, we both have podcasts here on Acast and we interview powerful women. Mm. So our podcast goes like hand in hand.
Exactly. We should do more together.
I know.
Take it on the road.
Exactly.
With the baby.
With the baby.
Do you know if it's a boy or a girl?
It's a girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yay.
And it's, you know, because it's due on 11th of March.
Yeah.
But I'm like hoping she comes on 8th because it's like the
International Women's Day.
Yeah, I know. So I'm like, get out the 8th.
And not
get out
the 11th,
eighth.
Because that's the Ides of March, I think, when Julius Caesar was killed. Or
oh,
something.
Okay. Okay. Let's,
now I've
like,
gotten you really scared. No, March 8th.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a sign then, you know, for me doing this job. But yeah, we really want to, you know, inspire and push women forward and send the message that you can do it. And, you know, during the podcast journey that you have had, what have these women taught you?
I think, really exactly what you're saying, that it is not easy, and usually you are kind of failing. I don't want to use that word, but perfection aspects. Like, I remember when I interviewed my sister-in-law, Mika, she was like, yeah, I'm famous. I have a great career, but I'm addicted to drugs. I mean, sleeping pills. She hasn't slept normally for a day. Her marriage has suffered, you know. I mean, I think this is not discouraging women. I think more and more we've had to be perfect for so long, for centuries, and we were judged on our beauty and like, you know, you can't be too nice, but you can't be too strong and you can't be too ambitious. And I think just hearing these women's voices tell like the authenticity, like a lot of people that I have interviewed in the fashion world, whose podcast will come out soon, like in New York, you know, when I was young, I dreamed, like, I love fashion. I still kind of work with it in some ways, but I had like this, I'm going to be like Carrie Bradshaw. I want to be the editor of Vogue. And then you meet these women and they're amazing, but they don't have, you know, maybe they're single. Maybe they never had kids. I mean, you see that you really just, you have to make choices in life and stick with them. And, but you can be really happy. And I think what's happening in America now, and I think everywhere, is you have these younger generation women, I think like our age and lower, especially in their 20s and teens. They are like super strong feminists. You know, they really say it like it is. They're not scared to be themselves. And I think that's the most exciting thing that I've seen. And so this journey has really taught me a lot. And the most, I think, has been how powerful female friendship is. I mean, my first season, especially the Swedish guests, and there were a lot of politicians, or Margaret Wallström, or Annie Lööf, or, you know, Gunilla Hurlitz. These women have all actually been really important to my life. Like, they really empowered me while I was in Sweden. They helped me in different ways. And so I wanted to show that story, too, that, you know, women do and can and should help each other. And I think it, you know, my poor husband would kill me for saying this, but I think it's almost more important to have, or as important to have, really strong female friends as like a really strong marriage.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there are things that you cannot talk to your husband about. Men are different than women.
They don't understand.
No, they don't. They do not get it. You can say, you know, something about, I can't believe the way my boss treated me, but they won't get it. It's just, you need to vent in that way. And I think I was lacking that for a long time. Because I think I had a child quite early compared to my friends. So I was a mother and they were still kind of partying or going out or working a lot. And like, so I've always felt like never at the same stage, and it was a bit lonely. I don't have siblings. As I said, I have a much younger brother that's adopted. So I realize now how much I was holding in, actually, and trying to be perfect. Like, I once had this aunt of my aunt that I really looked up to. She was gorgeous and, I mean, kind of a real character. And I remember being 18 and she said to me, she had been married four times, and her last husband was very wealthy and much older than her, but they had an amazing life, like a storybook. And she said, you know, I was the perfect wife. I never once complained about having a headache. And just, I remember thinking, oh my God, is that what you have to do when you're married? Be perfect. And I think, again, that's what this podcast has showed me. And maybe you see that when you sit down with women. I mean, there's some kind of magic that happens when we all let go and we let go of this obsession to be perfect or to kind of judge ourselves against each other and start working together. It's not that we're against men, but there's something really powerful about sisterhood and womanhood, and it's super strong. I interviewed the artist Jeff Koons, really famous, and it'll be in the next in season two. And I asked him about, you know, gender and art and feminism, and he said, you know, I don't know what happened in America or in history, because in our early history, whether it was ancient Egypt or like even Greek mythology, the woman goddess was like the strong one, like. They were the leaders of the village. They were the empresses. They were, you know, the goddesses of fertility. They brought life. And something happened, you know, in the past 1,000 years. But I say it's changing now.
Yeah, I hope so. Definitely. And like you said, with the younger generation,
absolutely.
They're definitely, you know, not afraid of saying what they feel or want. They're just like going out
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
As you say, you have a special background. Your mom was an immigrant from Poland.
Yes.
Escaping from the communism there.
Yes.
So you have both the European and American side
exactly.
in you.
Exactly.
What do you believe is the most important to bring out from these two different worlds? What has your Polish side taught you? And what has the American way of living
God.
Life taught you?
The Polish crazy side. crazy
is not always bad.
No. It's great. And it took me a long time to realize that, actually, because I think it's hard to be, even though Europeans always think America is so diverse, in many ways it's also actually like very conventional. You're supposed, depending on what area you live in, you're supposed to look a certain way and speak a certain way, and people don't really, I think Europeans are a little bit more like, walk down the streets of Stockholm, no woman looks the same or dresses the same. It's
don't
really
you think?
Artistic. Well, in black, yeah. But really cool.
Yeah. But artistic, yeah.
Artistic.
They're really like showing their personality.
Absolutely. And I think that the European side of me, and especially the immigrant side, is just an endless drive. Like very, I think... Not just Eastern Europeans are very hard workers, and they've suffered a lot. I mean, they've been at war and occupied for 100 years now, constantly. So it's kind of a traumatized people, actually, but really, really determined and hardworking and never taking no for an answer. And that's very much my mother. She's super strong. And I think the American side is really a lot of dreamers, which is also a great thing. And I think combining dreaming big, and even when we were really poor, it never dawned on me that I was, because especially my father, actually, which I think is really important when you have a daughter, he always told me, you know, we may not have all this money or a great network, but you can be the president. You can be a CEO. You know, I wasn't compared to a brother or something since I was an only child. And hearing that from my father and then having a mother that was always at work and always work. And it didn't affect me, actually. I was kind of proud of it. Like, so I grew up with this image that, you know, women are just as, if not more powerful, actually, than men. And they make all the rules in the house and they make the decisions with money. I think that was fantastic. But I mean, it's something that I've actually thought a lot about as I'm now working kind of in entrepreneurship and tech and on this initiative, Brilliant Minds, which is showing Stockholm as like a leader in innovation. A lot of the new generation immigrants in America and in Sweden are the ones that are founding the really hot startups. It's not the people that went to the best schools or Harvard or Handels. It's people that never give up. They are so hardworking, that drive. And I used to think that was almost a curse, because for me, my parents, it was never good enough. If I got an A, I should have had an A+. If I got second place in a skating competition, why didn't I get first place?
They said that.
Oh, yeah. They were really, really, really
tough
on me.
How did you handle that?
It was very, I mean, it was, again, one of these things. It was extremely hard. I mean, I remember, like, crying, being really paranoid all the time, not being able to sleep. But I guess it translates to being, like, not, I don't want to use the word perfectionist, but I always think I can do more. And that might be a little bit of a destructive thing, but I've tried to translate it into it. I always think I can do more for others. Like, if I help someone, I think I can help 10 people, or I want to do more and more. And so I think you can channel things into positive ways. And as I get older, I mean, I'm 31 now, I think that I understand that. And you accept parts of yourself, like maybe that were not good when you were younger, that you didn't know how to deal with, that really stressed you out. And because you can't change that much, but you can make it into a positive.
Yeah, that and the drive. Sense. Yeah. As you said, like, your mom was like, okay, why did you come second place and all that? And I was listening to a podcast with Bea Åkerlund.
Yes.
And she also have a Polish mother.
It was so funny.
Yeah. And you guys were talking about, you know, my mom always said, like, you make it or you not coming home.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, a whole opposite way than, you know, the kids in US get raised, because they're like, okay, you matter, you're good enough, like, you're, you know, you're special, and you, like, everyone should respect you. How do you see that two sides of raising, and, like, how do you raise your daughter with that, like, having the Polish side of, like, you know, be number one, but I mean, America is also be number one, but it's like a smoother way of being number one. And the dreaming you talked
it's
about.
It's hard, actually, because I question it myself. I mean, I really struggle because, I mean, my parents, they did not even worry to call me, like, stupid. You know, they would do that when I was a kid. So I have this side of me that I can never say that to my daughter. She's the great. You're perfect. You're so smart. But it's really important. I have this conversation with a lot of friends that are either, you know, comfortable or established or have done well financially or, you know, have a position of power in society. You know, how do you give your kids the element of struggle without making them struggle? And that's the paradox. And I actually have a really hard time. My daughter is six. And I think with a girl, it's even more important sometimes to be, you know, not saying you're the best, but give her a lot of confidence, because I think for some reason I see little boys and I see little, and it starts already at age 5 or 6. The boys just throw themselves into things. They take, the girls are, I don't know if I can do this. I can't. It's too hard. You know, you start hearing that for the first time, and it's really surprising, actually. But I think we both have this phenomenon. In Sweden, you call them curling parents.
Yeah.
In America, we call them helicopter parents. Like, you know, the generation that we want to help them with everything, you know, the team is the most important thing. And there's a lot of discussion about that. And I think for me, what I want to kind of inculcate the most in my daughter Aurora is actually creativity. I think hardworking, like being honest, but I think the time we're heading into now, you're going to have to be entrepreneurial and creative. And like, of anything my parents gave me, I think that they always, you know, my mom used to say, if you don't like the house you were built, given, build your own. Build it yourself. Build your destiny. I think that's super important now. And I'm working on it. I don't know. It's hard. You'll see.
Yeah, I will see. But yeah, I grew up here in Sweden and my parents are from Hungary, both my mom and dad. Yeah.
That's what I thought your last name. I was like, is she Swedish or is that her?
No, yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah, and they also left because of the communism there and all and that. And, you know, I have a lot of pressure on me to succeed in whatever I do. And I've been thinking of that. Do you believe that it's like typical for immigrant kids to have a lot of responsibility for their family's success? Because you see how your mom and dad struggled so much for you. And you're like, okay, that's not for nothing. I'm going to show you that, you know, while you struggled, I'm going to like give to my family and succeed.
Absolutely. That's why I said it's not even if you're Hungarian or Polish or from India or Zimbabwe. I see that trend, and I have a lot of friends now in different kind of areas that are really successful, actually. And same with Bea Åkerlund. We laughed the minute she said Polish mother, we got it.
Yeah.
Because my parents used to say to me, you better be the best because we came all the way across, you know, the Atlantic. We struggled for you. And all of my immigrant friends, like in Chicago, they had that. But many of them became very successful, although we're all traumatized. You know? So I don't know what's the answer.
Therapy.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I do that for sure. No, I think that it is like a universal immigrant thing, but I don't know if it's that bad. I mean, I think there has to be a balance. I mean, sometimes I think my parents pushed me way too hard. And I did suffer from it in some ways. You know, I think like I was depressed sometimes when I was younger. There were different things. But at the same time, I think I could handle anything. I mean, there's not many things because we had a hard life. I had already been through so much by the time I was 18. You know, my dad was always losing his job. I was helping him write his resume when I was 8. You know, they were actually dependent. I mean, I don't know if you felt this, but I always felt sometimes like the adult too, because they didn't understand America. So I was like the bridge, you know, I would say, this is not how you do things, mom, or this is not how you communicate at work. You should speak this way. Americans don't do this. And so it's a funny relationship sometimes you have. And a lot of my immigrant, like first, because I was born in the U.S., so I'm first generation. I hear that a lot. But I don't know if it's a bad thing.
No, I don't think so.
And I actually like really, that side of me will say like, my daughter is so spoiled, you know? I mean, she grew up in an embassy where, you know, she dropped a piece of clothing on the ground and someone picked it up for her. You know, she has so many things that were done for her and she feels, I think, but the good thing is she feels secure. I mean, I think sometimes I felt insecure. I never knew what would happen next. Then, you know, then you really have to work on that as an adult, like to get over that feeling, yeah. Because it's a lot of anxiety. I mean, I think immigrant parents are very anxious and a lot of them have lived really hard lives. And my mom and I had a really, really bad relationship for a long time. And if you would have asked me when I was 21 or 18, what will my relationship with my parents be like? I would say I probably won't talk to them much. And if I get married, because I was like, I'm not going to get married. If I do, we're not going to be that close. You know, I'll do my own thing. It could not have been more the opposite. I mean, my mom is with my daughter right now. We're really close. My dad is retiring to live with us to help me so I can work.
How did you get past that then? Because I recognize
therapy. Yeah. A lot of therapy. But I realized I was really angry. You know, once I let go of that, and I did, I went to therapy. We went when I was younger. And I think also when my parents adopted my brother, and he's adopted from Poland. And I remember when he first came, he was 6. So he's older already. And I was 19. I was out of the house. I mean, I was at university. And when they told me they were adopting, I started to cry. And then I got really mad. And I said, you know, I lived such a hard life. And like, it was almost like I had to struggle, but he's going to have an easy life because now they had money and now things were different. And I realized, oh my God, I'm holding so much in actually. And I think once I let go of that and once I accepted that my parents are not going to be the American parents, they're not going to be, I can't go to them for everything. I can't expect them to relate certain things. But yes, they can also give me they're very religious, you know. I mean, my dad goes to church every day, very Catholic. But once I accepted that, it's kind of, I accepted myself. And so now I'm so happy, actually, because in the end, that's all you have. I mean, your parents are the ones that really know you more than a husband or a best friend. And so I'm really happy, actually. But it turned around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, the relationships are not always easy with the family, but they're still the one who's closest to you.
Exactly.
So you need to value it.
Exactly.
And do what you need to do, yeah. To
get
keep
over
it strong.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're driven by gender equality questions, and you also want US to learn from Sweden and Sweden to learn from US. What's the most important thing you think Sweden could learn from US and vice versa?
Definitely. I mean, there's a reason I called my podcast Standout. I think that Swedish women, they have everything that American women are fighting for. I mean, you live in America, there's constantly in the news, like maternity leave, daycare, but we don't have anything. They have it all here and some. You know, you have sick day, you're paid if your child is sick. I mean, there's just so much security. But I think that being Swedish, you're not supposed to promote yourself or brag or stand out. And being a woman in any country, I mean, that's why Sheryl Sandberg wrote a book called Lean In. You know, women are also, you're not supposed to be too ambitious. You're not supposed to promote yourself. So I think, you know, my sister-in-law has this great saying. She wrote three books kind of on her career. And she always says, know your value. Like, know what your value is, grow your value, and communicate it. And that's the exciting thing, I think, what podcasting is doing, what the internet did. Like, we all have a voice now, and women are kind of really learning to use it. So I think that can be both for Swedish and American women. It's just use that voice more. Use your platform. If you don't have one, create a platform like you did. You know, you started a podcast. You wanted to do something and be someone and have your own identity. And there's never been a time where women have that, like, even more opportunity than men. Entrepreneurship, you can really create your own life and work and platform. And I think that's super exciting. But what I think, now I'm going to get in trouble again. I don't think it's the women. I think American men could learn from Swedish men.
Yeah. What do they need to learn?
Oh my God, everything. I mean, Swedish men are really, not to be kind of over glorifying, but they are so much farther ahead in terms of helping at home. And that's statistically proven. I mean, I think like the World Bank or something does statistics that Swedish men, there's women in every country do more housework, but like the difference is the smallest in Sweden.
Yeah.
And I see even, I mean, across ages, like even if men in their 50s or 20s, and if it's men in finance or bankers or something, they help at home.
Yeah.
I remember going to dinners when we were in the embassy as the ambassador and his wife, and we'd go to a friend's house, and it was the first time I actually had seen a powerful man in that kind of position, like making the dinner and serving it. You know, in America, you would have like people, staff helping you. And I like that. I mean, in Sweden, you're supposed to do it yourself. You know, you do things yourself. You don't get help. And the couple is very equal. And I think Swedish men are also not as, sometimes I think all men are still pretty intimidated by strong women. But I think Swedish men the least. I mean, I don't know. I have a lot of friends that they're really powerful women and they make more money than their husbands in Sweden, and they're more famous than their husbands. And I see that these men are really proud of them. Whereas I think in America, it's still like the man should be the breadwinner. You know, you read about these Brooklyn dads, like if you take paternity leave as a dad, you're seen as like a loser.
But isn't it time for America to like, I mean, because you, you look up to US in so many ways, and then they're so far back, you know, in history with all this stuff that definitely don't make the gender equality gap smaller.
No.
I mean, what can we do here? Because I mean,
need to ship them all to Sweden. Yeah. Or you and I need to go on the road with the podcast or something. But I think it is like information, actually. I mean, I'm always surprised at, I interact with a lot of really smart men and women, like in the business world or government. Many of them don't even realize that there's a country in the world like Sweden where you get so much family leave and that men actually take paternity leave and that they don't really know.
Yeah, I know. I had a friend that was here in Sweden that was from America. And she was like, well, who are all these gay dads walking around, you know, with the strollers?
Gay nannies is the one I've heard.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, no, like they're dads, like they're on maternity, like daddy leave or whatever it's called.
Yes.
And probably because they always have like slim pants also.
Skinny jeans and strollers. I think that shocks the Americans.
And the latte there in their hands as well. I mean, yeah, we need to get that to US because it's really...
I think we're far away though still.
But it's really hard since like, you know, I also talked to you about me. I was there in a sort of pair in Chicago. And, you know, it's so... I understand that... You know, as a mother, you don't want to leave your child when it's like, I don't know, 6 weeks to a daycare. But then the daycare is also expensive. So I understand you quit your job because it's also about the money.
Exactly.
But I mean, where should you start then? I mean, where can America start there? Well, like, what should you do? Because, I mean, you don't have the rights as a woman in US to get back to work or like you're put outside of the work life. It's just sad, really sad.
And we don't value, I mean, another thing that in addition to daycare and maternity is it's okay for a woman to take a year off in Sweden and you're not seen as less marketable or less valuable. But in America, there's statistics, like even when I was moving back, I was so stressed that, you know, even though I was working, I mean, for free, but I was working on a contract in the embassy and I was super active, but I had these fears like, but if an American looks at my resume, they're just going to see that from 25 to 30, I didn't do anything like resume wise or like traditionally, like I was employed. Oh no, I'm never going to be able to get a job. And that was, I mean, I think we're strong and creative, so women will always come up with something, but that is true. And there's statistics that say, I think, like, what, every year you're off. And once, you know, if you've been out of the workforce for 5 years or something, you're like 80% likely to never get in again. And I have friends and my sister-in-law, especially, she's older, has female friends that, like, you know, one I'm thinking of in particular, I mean, she's dying to get back to work. She hasn't worked. Her daughter's 8. And I think after a while, it's not just the workforce, it's you just lose your confidence. Like, if I ever give advice to women, and I say, just never totally check out. Like, you take maternity leave, or, you know, it's okay if sometimes you feel you need to prioritize your family, but keep sharp. Like, have work lunches or read a lot. I mean, because I think it's part of it is also our confidence. Like, you lose the ability to do an interview like you and I are, or that's hard to interview someone and to feel natural, or to give a speech, or to kind of do a job interview. I mean, I think every year you begin to feel, and the sad thing is in your relationship too, often those are the years where the man begins to soar. Like, you have your first child, you're in your 30s, your wife usually stays home, but the man's career is going up, 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 because those are his highest years. And I think then the relationship becomes really bad. I mean, I think my marriage is so much, at least on my perspective, is so much better when I feel that I'm equally valuable. It's not like my husband is the famous ambassador and I'm the sidekick fool that's supposed to smile and nod all the time. I want to have a mission too and a purpose. And they actually say, even though in America people think that, oh, if you're a working couple, you never see each other, it's so bad. But it's proven that those are the couples, like, especially when the woman has her own money, that divorce the least and have like the best relationships. And I see that now. It's just about your, I guess it depends what kind of person you are, but I felt like shit when I wasn't working. I felt like I was not worth anything. Maybe that's because of the way I was raised as well, that my parents really emphasized, like, you should be accomplishing things and be successful. But the kind of person I am, I have to work. And I was staying home with my daughter a lot, like for the first 2 or 3 years. Even when we were here, I was always home. And I was there, but I wasn't there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be sitting and looking at her across the table and she'd be screaming at 6 months or 9 months. And I was depressed. I absolutely had like postpartum depression for sure. And I wasn't even paying attention to her. I was kind of like wishing I was doing something else. And now I work a lot. I travel a lot. Like, I mean, this month I'm away like for a week and then again in Europe. But when I'm home, I'm so into it. Like I go to, I joke with her. I play. I was thinking this week, I never played when she was younger. I wasn't into it. Like even the way my husband was, like he would come home and I was once even envying him. He was so into playing with her, like so in the character and in the moment. And I had never felt like that. But now I do. I mean, you become a little bit more valuable of it's quality, not quantity, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not the amount of time. So I think that it is really important. I hope American women get more right. And we're fighting for them. But I think we're a long time away. If you look at Sweden, it's been equal for like 100 years. I mean, even like the Viking times, you know, it's been pretty long time of pushing this kind of equality. So I'm hoping like my daughter and your daughter will have that. I hope.
Yeah, me too. Me too. US, it's such a big country and people look up to it like we discussed. But I mean, then I also thinking of all these shows, you know, called like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Miami, New York. I mean, you name it. It's like every city, they have like their Real Housewives. And we also have, you know, Swedish Hollywood wives in
yes.
like Hollywood here in Sweden. And these shows, you know, they portray women of being, you know, married to a rich man. And the job of the wife is to, you know, stay fit, stay happy. And the message is almost like, you know, happy wife, happy life. Mm. And I mean, there are young girls looking up to these women and wanting to be like them, you know, pleasing their man. And it's like a modern way of living life the way we did like 200 years
yes.
ago. And they glamorize these things and like the gender roles. And I mean, I'm thinking of this and I wonder, like, do you believe that these shows somehow, you know, slows down the development of the gender equality since the young people, you know, who will build our nation, look up to these shows and like, okay, I want to be a part of this, but it's just like bullshit.
I know. I mean, the best thing coming out of that is when you read in the Us magazine, what really happens.
Oh yeah,
they're
when
all
you're
bankrupt,
in line.
They're all like getting divorced, all cheating on each other. They're all alcoholics. And then I'm like, God, this is what we need to spread. I hope that actually, I mean, when I watch that show, I feel so sorry for them, or I feel like you're laughing at them because they're such idiots and clowns. I hope people see it that way. But I do think reality TV has been, I mean, it really came up like, I think my time, I remember watching The Bachelor, and it has not been the best for women's issues. And it kind of makes me a little bit worried about.
But sometimes I'm going to say
that it's
nice. It's
a little bit funny, too. Yeah. Sometimes you need to let go.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, but these shows, I'm like, you know, I don't want people to wanting this life of being, you know, with someone who supports you, because that's what we talked about. Because mm-hmm. then, you know, yeah, it might be fun for a year, but then, you know, you want to feel like you matter, like you bring something
exactly.
to this family. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if this show is good, because you also see all this drama and it's like, okay, you have time for drama in your life because you probably have some issues in
yes.
you, I think. But now Hillary Clinton is up running for president. What difference do you think we would have in the world by having, you know, women as a top leader for all the countries that now has, you know, the men's that we've seen like through all these years, if they would be women? What do you think would be different in the world?
I think actually it would make an enormous difference. And I've seen this a little bit. Women are different. We communicate differently. We look at problems differently. I think diversity and having a different perspective on things is the key. And I think it would also make people realize, I don't know if you've heard of this term, unconscious bias.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the way even we raise kids, we don't even think about it. We say, you know, of course, if you have a boy and a girl, like, sweetheart, you come help mommy with the cookies. And, you know, the boy, you go out and chop the wood. And as you get older, these little things continue. So, you know, if there's a male CEO, people usually want to choose someone like them. So they'll choose a younger man to mentor. Like things nobody's doing it on purpose, but it's still there. You assume that a woman doesn't want a leadership role.
Yeah.
Or because she doesn't communicate it, because we communicate differently. So I think just having a woman bring in a woman's perspective at the top would make a massive difference and would also force, you know, there's many governments and nations around the world that are kind of, you know, misogynistic and sexist, and there are nations where women don't have rights. I mean, those leaders would have to face the fact that the most powerful person in the world is a woman. That would be incredible. And I love Hillary. I think she's amazing. I mean, she came to Sweden and she really helped me. We were new and a new ambassadorial couple, and I was quite young and in a traditional role. No one was really giving me, and I tried to like have a voice and I wasn't getting it basically. And it was pretty hard. And when she came, she gave a speech to the whole embassy. And that's always what happened. When a big secretary of state comes, they address, and she said, you know, yeah, I know Mark, my husband. He worked for my husband, Bill Clinton, in the White House. He's going to be a great ambassador. But he goes, you know who will be an even better ambassador? Natalia. And everyone kind of could not believe their ears. But she doesn't know me. I mean, I had met her before, but she knew what it felt like to be this sidekick, to not be seen. Because you're seen but not seen, you know, and definitely not heard. And that made such a difference for me. So she really is. She walks the walk on these issues. And so I think she's amazing, and I pray that she wins.
So if you could dream big, like if you would, let's say, lead America, what would you change? The first thing you would change?
I think I would definitely do these. I mean, I would make maternity. I would do a lot of the family leave and things like that, like Sweden has. I think that that's just the foundation. And so definitely that. I have to think about it, maternity leave day. But I think it's a lot of, we need to support the family more. Until we do in my country, we will not have any women leaders. We just won't. Not as many as we would need, actually. And I think always things that support entrepreneurship is amazing, and like tech, and so that's the future. I think the schools need to be fixed a bit, and making also schools like Harvard and Yale more open. I mean, it's so expensive. So there's a lot of initiatives. I mean, our generation is the one that people say will not have it as well off as any other for the first time. And so I think we need to do a lot of things around young people in America.
What would you change in Sweden if you would lead Sweden?
I wish that politicians would speak up more, and people. I mean, it's like the standout concept, but there's so much going on in Europe. I mean, there's so much with the refugees and immigrants, and like people are really scared here to take a stance. If you take a stand, you're racist, or you're controversial, or you don't believe in equality. I would definitely change that. And I mean, I'm going to get really technical now, but I think this country is known for entrepreneurship. I mean, Spotify, Klarna. And I think there are certain kind of things you could do, like there's different rules around the stock options and things like that, that would really raise the amount of entrepreneurship. And I think there are some things now going on that in the government that kind of keeps it down. So I think housing, like it's really hard to find an apartment and different things like that. That's very technical, but I would change.
Well, thank you for coming here. You're such an inspiration, I need to say. So nice listening to you. So thank you for
what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for what you're doing. We're doing kind of...
We're together.
We're like hand in hand.
Exactly.
For the women. Okay, thank you. And now Friday, are you going to party?
I wish. No. I'm probably going to go back to my hotel and
it's
work.
It's too cold.
Yeah, and I'm freezing.
Yeah, me too.
That's the part of my life that has fallen out a bit, I think. It's like you always hear this when you're working and you're a mother and the party part. I'm like, last night I went out to dinner with my girlfriends, and I think at 9 o'clock I started to fall asleep. So I'm I'm like my mom. That's what my mom does.
We always gonna be like our moms.
I know that. I know.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.